This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt.
Hello, Pop.
Hello.
So, I have now, with this episode, done 200 episodes of this podcast.
Yes, that's terrific.
Do you remember when I first mentioned I might be doing this? Was I already doing it by the time you found out? I forget.
No, I don't remember anything. How did you start it?
I started it because I was desperate to pay off one of the tax bills because of that screw-up I had done.
Yeah.
Where I think it was like the 2012 taxes. I'd kind of gone up to about 35 grand because of penalties and everything. And I was like, well, I should really do something about that. So I ended up looking at Patreon, which allowed you to make products, basically sell those. You know, people could sign up and say, every time you make a thing, I'll give you some money.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about this episode. You started 2 years ago.
No.
You were talking about the podcast.
The whole project.
Yes. Oh, that I remember, yes.
Oh. It was a hope that it would dig me out.
Yeah.
You know. And at between 10 and 20 minutes an episode and 200 episodes, that means I've had to talk about myself and or stuff for about, you know.
I can't imagine ever being able to do that, as I've told you many times.
Functionally, it appears to have worked out as therapy. It turns out if you lock a guy with a microphone for this long, you end up kind of using it to dig deeper, right? If I run out of things to talk about, or in my case, I didn't want to repeat myself. Yeah. I'm like, well, what haven't I talked about yet?
Yeah.
Have I talked about some sort of trauma or some new angle on my life or some theme that I should do?
Yeah.
And I ended up with this. And you've listened to a few.
Yeah, I've listened to a few.
What do they hit you as?
Oh, I think they're pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm always looking for inaccuracies.
Well, that's always interesting to me, too, because, let's see, you are almost precisely about 30 years older than me, which means anything I experience when I'm 7, you're experiencing at 37. You know, if I remember doing a thing, I remember it through the eyes of a 11-year-old child, and you remember it as a 41-year-old parent.
Yes.
And then you end up having a stronger opinion one way or another. I know that we had a difference of opinion in terms of like why I did certain stuff or what happened and things like that. But I think they were like minor, right? There wasn't anything where you were like, this is whole cloth, completely wrong.
No, I
false.
Don't recall anything like that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. I've striven to be accurate. You know, part of the problem is you try to, over time, I don't know the first things the podcast covers is me going to the IBM Research Center as part of visitation with you, where you had to work, but you weren't ever going to give up a day with your kids. So I came along while you were at IBM Research. And so I'd play on the computers while you got some work done.
Yeah, I don't exactly recall that.
You don't recall me being brought from, like, say, Brewster over to Yorktown? And
no, I know you were there. But I would have thought I would have been able to pay more attention to you if you were there.
I mean, you definitely...
I think you were happy sitting in front of a computer.
Always.
Yeah.
Like always, right?
Yeah.
So there's like piles of computers you have me working with, right? Over time, like all these borrowed computers, all these different pieces, computers you got. Clearly that was my calling. Clearly that was my thing. And I've tried to plumb into the depths of why that happened, but, you know, that seems to have been the perfect thing for me, right?
Yeah. I do remember the time we went to Boston to look at colleges when you were in the 9th grade, and I took you to MIT, and you ran around, and you said, this place is great. They had a lot of computers, etc. And I made a speech to you that if you want to go to a place like this, you better change your ways in school. And the only thing that came out of that was you like Boston.
Yes. And I did not change my ways.
Yeah.
Do you know what my grade point average was at in Emerson? You know what it was in high school.
Well, as a matter of fact, I found a pile of old report cards and stuff yesterday you might be interested in.
No, I'm sure it's great. Yeah. It's a
And some of your artwork.
It's all about the teacher comments. That's what always makes it great. So do you know, do you remember what my grade point average was?
No.
1.7. That was my final grade point average.
At Emerson?
At Horace Greeley.
1.7 out of 4?
Yes. So I buckled up and when I went to Emerson, and do you know what my grade point average was at Emerson?
1.7?
2.1.
Oh. So you improved.
I improved.
Yeah.
I had an upward thing. But I also got a lot of things done. You know, I did plays and radio and television, everything else. So and I did, you know.
I remember I went to the film festival where you made that toilet movie.
Yes.
Which was very good. It was the hit of the show.
Yeah. And I made films.
Right.
They're weird, they're quirky, they're odd, but I made them. So that's good to know. That's a good happy ending, I suppose.
Yeah, you ended up a little differently.
Yes. Well, I think it's generally worked out.
Yes. Oh, I think you've worked out fine. You're doing what you like. You like what you do. And I originally was trying to push you to be more interested in making a better living.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that was a big mistake. And you didn't listen to me anyway, so it was fine. It all worked out fine.
I know exactly.
I don't remember a lot of things, do I?
Well, but that's interesting to me because, you know, so I'm 51, you're 81, which means you've had all this benefit of, you know, decades of experience in various areas and a lifetime of stuff that even, you know, that I haven't done. And I think part of it is what represents emotional attachment to, like, as I've been kind of exploring my own history for the purposes of the podcast, I'm usually trying to find turning points, points at which I go, you know, when I see this aesthetic and I respond emotionally, that might be because I was at the IBM Research Center. Or if I remember, you know, visiting this event with you or with someone else, and then that's where I first learned that this was a potential possibility, and that's a turning event. And in doing so, I have to draw up details of what happened, and that's usually where things fall apart, right? Like where spatiality, time difference, where I'll say I did this, and then a week later I did this, and then, you know, I talked to the amazing Randy, that magician, years ago. I met him at a convention. And he was telling me how he had this biographer, and the biographer was kind of like just double checking on his stuff. And he said, yeah, and you know, for 1 year I went to Europe to do this. And he said, I didn't go. The person who did the research went off and looked up all my stuff. I never went to Europe that year. I'm a liar.
Right.
I don't even remember it right.
Right.
And that's a problem, right, where you're trying to put together stories. So I ended up kind of drifting into a lot more depths of finding, of like taking things that I'm either known for or things that I like to do and then trying to trace back the motivations. And in doing that, I end up creating this lore, right?
Well, like, now there'll be an electronic trail of your doings.
Well, there's certainly now a recording of my thoughts on my doings.
Yeah.
You know, and each one is like a weird little overview where I usually go then into the emotion. Like, I like to think what this podcast has done so far is I'm really drawing through the emotional part of technology. And I think that's what did in the documentaries before I stopped doing them, right? Was each one was kind of an overview of not just like this happened, this happened, this happened, but people talking about the emotional effect of these things.
Yeah, that's so true.
Right?
Yeah.
Less about like, Screwdrivers are great, and this screwdriver was the last time I worked on something with my grandfather. It's my bond, right? Mm. Something like that. And so that's worked out. Like, that turns out to be something people attach to, you know. Because of the way the podcast happens, there's about 400 people who hear it. They'll hear this one like a day or two after it's recorded. And then there's like another 1,000 who hear it anywhere between 3 and 7 weeks later. And that means I get that distance. So then I get the response from people saying, oh, I just listened to whatever episode. Or they'll just start talking about their response to the episode and I'll have no idea which one they're referring to. I'm kind of afraid to tell them. And I go look and I try to figure out, like, which one do they think it is? Like, there's one I recorded 4 weeks ago and it just came out on the other, you know, output thing.
You mean that many people listen to the podcast after?
Yeah. I mean, generally people don't want to pay for a podcast, right? Some people are paying. I think the most people pay right now is about $50 an episode. And then the least amount is $1 an episode. And then some people are like, I don't want to spend money on this. And so they see it when it comes out, right? It comes out on different platforms. I have about 9 platforms it comes out on, and then it just joins into people's feeds. And each one is like relatively short, and it seems to have worked out. And so that's what it, you know. And one of the effects of that is that I get responses from people who are like, wow, okay, I didn't know that, you know, you had a strong feeling on this. And I get really abstract sometimes, and I get really, you know, I have to sit there and I try to produce a narrative out of nowhere about where, you know, right? Like, you and mom said something, and now that affects what I do at 25. And at 25, I then, you know, motivates me in such a way that at 50, I look back and I think this, right? Like, this personalized narrative. And I'm sure I
missed the mark. You really think that there's that much influence from your parents?
I think so. I think that what happens, well, there's several things, right?
I mean, why do kids turn out so differently then? It's got to be 90%.
But I mean, even that's an influence. Like when mom said, you can't go more than 100 miles away from the house when you go to college. And I chose whatever I could find that was the farthest away from the house, Boston, right? That had colleges. That influences things as opposed to, like, go do what you want, you know, laissez-faire, whatever. Like, that sense of being told things and control means that I acted a different way when I put myself in situations that I wanted distance and isolation away from what I perceived of that way. Or if you want to make it even more weirdly concrete, moving to a specific town means that that choice by the parent affects, like, what the kid sees is what the world's like around them. So if I go to a crappy town, I act this way. And if I go to a great town, it's a different way and different social groups, right? You had different, I think that does affect things because you build an outlook, you build conclusions. Some of those conclusions are certainly wrong, but I think that does it. And then somewhere in there, you have a thing where the parent has a, you know, credos that they kind of build up and they kind of impress on the kids and the kids choose to follow it or reject it, but they might follow it, right? 2 podcast episodes ago, I was just ruminating on the fact that I have very little mechanical knowledge. Like, I'm not, if I take something apart,
yeah,
that's usually it. It's never going back together again because I can't spatially keep track of what was there before.
Yeah.
And I don't see gaps, right? Like, if I work with computer code, I'll be like, where's the thing that prints to the screen? There's none in here because I can feel it. I can see how the flow works. But if I have something like a VCR or an engine, I don't say to myself, geez, where is it doing the combustion? I'm going to have to find that wire. That wire is missing. Like, I don't have that. And that's just because I never, I mean, sure, could I learn it to some extent? Maybe. I could take pictures and do things. But even then, I'm augmenting my lack of talent or awareness in that space. I'm using tricks, like notes. I'm good at making notes, so I'll make a note. And I think that's interesting. Like, that comes from where you go. Like, you were allergic to petroleum, so petroleum-based activities were not part of our childhood. You and I didn't sit around at night with our shirts off with a lantern trying to take care of the car, right? Like, cars were not, like, car maintenance wasn't part of what we do. Like that kind of a thing, right? Like I just never came from that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't interesting. So I think that's, you know, I do have a sense that parents have a, I mean, even if it's opposite, even if it's like my parents never wanted me to do this, and now I do this. So I'm, you know, I'll show them.
Rebellious.
Yeah.
Rebellion, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it is. I think it has a piece to it.
Do I need to say more? I feel like I'm just going, yes, no, yes.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not adding very much to this thing, Jason. Should I babble about things?
Well, okay. So what's interesting to me is that I have a bunch of guys who lost their dads relatively early ages, 20s, 30s, 40s, right? So for some of them, I've seen them be extraordinarily touched to watch me interact with you because it's something they couldn't do, right? Like you nailed out a good long time, much higher than some people get with their, you know, I'm here now in my 50s and I still have it, right? So yeah. Part of it is just hearing me interact with somebody who they, you know, would have liked to have also done. And I mean, 1,000 times before I've told you that you've been great. Like, yeah. like A-plus marks on the dadding, you know.
Thank you.
It's worked out really nicely. It's like so much of life's little joke, right, is that it's like this winding mountain where you go along one side of this curve and you can see the other curve, and you have very strong opinions on how that other curve is going until you end up on that curve, right? So I didn't get to be a parent, but I did get to live for 45 years. And so my fun things I've been doing is like having a strong event or something that I believe very strongly in, or where we fought, or where there was a difference of opinion, or, you know, you had to bail me out of a problem. And then doing the numbers to be like, I'm 22, I'm in legal trouble. You're 52, dealing with your son being in legal trouble. I'm cranky and annoyed and bitter at school and I want to get out of school. And I'm 14 and you're 44 trying to figure out. And it's been very interesting because now I'm up in that range now. Like now under that number, I have a 20-year-old who's just in the middle of college.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because then you get to kind of wait, you know, like one of the common things a kid will do is just think, oh, my parents are messing up on every, like they don't understand. They don't process. They're not getting it. They're using old scale units of measurement and outlook, and they can't understand what I'm going through. And then now, you know, I'll be like, well, I'm 50 and I interact with a lot of young people. How do I feel? And what I quickly realize is like, no, well, there's not much I can, like, I would be making the same mistakes. Like, I would be doing the same things of like, this person's independent enough that they have a car and the ability to surprise me that they're suddenly in Chicago because they got a flight and they've made a terrible financial decision. They've invested in something they shouldn't have. And I'm going to have to give them advice or help them or make sure they clear a bill or something and step in.
Well, what I remember, like when you were a teenager and you would say something, I would say to myself, when I was that age, I wasn't that perceptive as he is. That happened a lot when you were a teenager. Mm. You would say, I'm influenced by this because of this. And I said to myself, I never thought that deeply about things when I was your age. So you started pretty early thinking about not just today, but thinking about things and trying to understand why you acted the way you did, et cetera.
Mm.
So you're probably done that all your life and you're way ahead of me in that area. I was very, I liked seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was great that you were that perceptive when you were that young. And I think it was because you did so much reading and that made you think, where I never did that.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of why at the heart attack helped, but it's part of why at 50, you know, I'm essentially going into the same outlook as somebody who's retired, which is, you know, focus on the things I care about, divest myself of things that I find burdensome for no good benefit or happiness, and you know, separate what I own and what I do and everything else into minimalistic approaches so that I'm more freer instead of being trapped. Like, that's kind of where I am now, which I think some people don't start doing till they're in their 70s, you know, where I'm like, I don't need to have a shipping container of stuff in the backyard. I don't need to be holding on to 1,700 floppy disks if I can either scan them or store them to be scanned by somebody else, you know, trying to reduce my physical footprint so I can decide to do something, you know, like, do I want to move or whatever? So, I mean, you know, and for some people, I think that's rather odd. Like, they're very, like...
Yeah, possessions become burdens.
Right.
They're like junk.
I think it's odd for people that they see me kind of like acting like this, where they're just like, this seems very negative, you know, very... down on your lifespan. And I'm like, well, I had a heart attack in my 40s. There's medical malady in my family. And it's possible for me to be both happy and taking advantage of every single day without making crazy long-term plans for things that would be, you know, like, I'm not sitting here going like, well, what kind of restaurant am I going to run? Because I want to run a restaurant or something. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not burdening myself with that and just saying, well, what's going to present itself next? And let's go with that. And if I'm looking at items where I go, maybe I'm not the guy who's going to do this. Maybe all I did was assemble it enough for some other maniac to work on and just set it up so that it's about as clean as possible. So that for them, it's a joy that they come across this box of stuff I assembled, even if it wasn't me that did it. And approaching it all that way and then taking advantage of like,
I mean, what you're saying, you think your lifespan will be short?
I'm saying that I'm planning as if that's potentially possible. Not
what
to
mean
the
planning. You mean,
like, I mean,
you
not,
said like this guy can pick up a box and know what to do with it.
Yeah, not to the detriment of like I'm not sitting here saying, oh man, I would love to go see something in Spain, but I'm never going to make it to Spain. I'll be dead in a year. I don't mean that. I mean in terms of like, well, I'm going to keep my nose down and work miserably so that I have enough money to go to Spain when I'm 70. That's not what I do. That's not how I work things.
No.
I either go, I'm going to get myself flown to Spain and give a good presentation, or I'm going to say to myself, do I need to go to Spain? As opposed to sitting around lamenting that I have not done the thing I'm going to do yet, but if I'm miserable until then, like, none of that. I'm just not built for that, and I'm not doing it. Like, that kind of thing. And I think part of that comes from, like, doing all the archiving work. I get to watch how everything plays out. And you realize how kind of random it is for some people, where they plan out too much and it doesn't happen. And then for other people, they run out of things to do. And you can clearly see the delineation, where it's like, well, they turned 66 and they were out of ideas. And then they died at 83. And that must have been the most boring 20 years. So I'm very much cognizant of that.
Well, what you'll notice when you get older is that somehow it takes longer to do things.
That too.
And you don't get that bored.
Oh, you mean in terms of you can make a whole meal out of going to the post office?
Well, it seems like you don't have enough time.
I see.
To do things.
Yeah.
Even though you're not, and I think back, how the heck did I do that? How was I able to handle all those things simultaneously that I did? And now it's harder to handle a lot of things simultaneously.
Right. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to be, you know, years hence. But I expect I'm going, you know, people would say, like, do you have any plans for if the archive doesn't work out? And one of my common refrains is, I'm going to be a professor at a school with the best and the worst ratings by the students. You know, where they're like 5 stars, you know, professor changed my life. And other people going like, he never touched the text and he just gave us all B's. And, you know, I hate him and whatever. And I'm like, yeah, it's probably me. I mean, some sort of educational future seems to be.
That would be a nice life.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you look at what you've done and you say, you know, I'm working on this item here. And I'm, you know, I just spent the last 4 days when I wasn't recording this, adjusting around 1.2 million recordings of podcasts at the archive. you know, like rebuilding the structure of how that all was. That's fun. Mm-hmm. I've written scripts to do it. It's nice. But do I want to be doing that for 25 years? Or do I want to figure out what about that I like and what benefits the most people and then find some other way to do it where maybe I'm not the person doing it. Maybe I'm just leaving instruction manuals on how I did it so that people can do it again. Mm. You know, like that seems to be, I see so many people who get kind of hung up on what they do is them. And I try to get away from that. So I guess that's part of it too. Like I said, it was, you know, the heart attack was very elucidating, you know? I mean, the doctor was very, the old Dr. Lytle was very direct, where he was like, yeah, so this happened in your myocardial infarction, and then if it had done this, you would have dropped completely dead on the sidewalk. Not even a question. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. It wasn't a case of like, well, it was touch and go. It was like, no, no, no. If this happened, gone. This one, yeah, we fixed you. We put you back out onto the street. So that was elucidating because I felt great, right? I just made you survive another week in a hospital. Right? I'd left you in vaguely pretty good shape.
Oh, that's right. You,
yeah, that I was just right. Taking care of you in the hospital. Yeah. I had just ensured that all those manuals that were in North Carolina had gone to the archive. Like I had cleared out one of my extant massive piles. I had gone to Australia. I'd walked 20 miles. I'd seen a couple friends, had a great meal, was like giving a great speech. That was really a good speech. All these things happened, and then suddenly I would have just ended. It wouldn't have been so bad. Like, it was not bad. It wasn't like I languished in prison or I veered off the road and hit a family and died. You know, I mean, I was like, wow, this in the doing things, making things happen. Feeling good, feeling a little tired, you know, because of course my heart was blocked 99%. So I was Red Bulling myself through the week. Not bad, right? Like I was doing things I wanted to do. Yeah. So I came out of it going like, oh boy, I get to do more.
Well, I found the second heart attack that I had, or recently had, I'm not as awake as I was after the first one.
Really?
Yeah. You think I don't have as much energy. So I'm thinking there's something going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pursuing looking into it.
I see. Oh, excellent. That's good to have an excellent recording of you then. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I'm going to go a bit longer with the podcast. I still think I have some more to say. I still think there's things going on. Glad you liked what you liked. Any ideas of what I can do to make things better or change it in some way that you think?
A podcast?
Yeah.
No, I don't even have any idea how you're able to do it now. So I really don't have any kind of suggestion about what you can do to make it better. And plus, I haven't listened to one for a while.
Mm.
So I don't know exactly what you're doing these days and what you're talking about.
I'll take it. I'll take that. Anyway, that's it, Pop. I just wanted to...
No, I feel like I haven't contributed very much here. It makes me a little disappointed.
In yourself?
In that I am not helping you make an interesting podcast.
I disagree. You have been everything. Anybody who listens to the podcast, who hears you, now hears where I came from. And that's precious. So no, I think you've helped a lot. Yeah, leave it there. Cool. I have all I need, Pop.
Okay.
All right.
This is Jason Scott talks his way out of it. Thanks to Josiah Lusher, James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Craig Talbert, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, John Sturm, Eugene, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt.